listening to CJSF 90.1 FM radio. Burnaby. Bum, 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 bum.
Show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on disability employment matters. So as economic times continue to be hit or miss, what's the impact on the disability community you've seen?
Well, I think the impact, Cam, has been one that the whole sort of community are seeing, or the whole of the employment sector. It's a challenge not only to continue to try and figure out where some of the leading edges are of new jobs or available jobs. We are seeing some cutbacks in some industries. Manufacturing has been one of those things. But we're also heading into a summer season, which we hope to see some more sort of, not temporary jobs, but sort of that summer bump we often see in the employment rate, where many more people are out active and spending money. So I think that a lot of folks are taking a wait-and-see attitude because they're unsure as to where it will lead. And as gas prices get higher, I think people will start to stick closer to home, that opportunities for, jobs and economic growth will be more localized, and that people will be spending money closer to home because they don't have the money to go elsewhere. So it's a two-edged sword. One, it's great to see folks sort of spending money in their home communities, but what also happens sort of if it's continuing, the tariffs, the gas prices, everything is getting more expensive, and wages are not keeping up to the cost of inflation or the cost of living increases. So we have a couple of double whammies, but we're always trying to find what is the silver lining, because even in hard times, and I've been doing employment services for over 32 years, we've seen difficult times before. It's for most folks, it's making your skills the highlight of what the interviewer sees. It's the opportunity to sort of highlight that you have the skills like everybody else. You're a good candidate. It just might take a little extra effort to dig deeper and find those sort of jobs that are on the sides, jobs that aren't always advertised, those internal sharing jobs. And we always like to tell folks that this may be your first or second job, but it'll never be the last. You have chances to move laterally. You could move upwardly. So there's so many factors that affect the economy, it's almost hard to nail down, is there any one specific thing?
So do you find that folks with disabilities might actually bring solutions to some of the problems we're facing in the employment sector?
Absolutely. We've always sort of focused on the fact that folks with disabilities or other marginalized communities, as an example, will think differently. They solve problems differently because their lived experience is different. The thing that employers are always looking for is those innovative, thought-provoking ideas or opportunities. And what we're trying to also sell is the idea that, well, folks with disabilities are different problem solvers because they have to solve different problems than everybody else because the world isn't built for them. So they have to adapt. They have to constantly innovating. Those are skills and traits that employers want. So those are the things that we always like to highlight for anybody when they're seeking employment. And it's important that we recognize our own skills as well, Cam, because, as a species, we're not always good at telling what we're good at, and we're trying to give people the understanding that these skills are valuable. The ability to adapt and innovate and solve problems comes from lived experience, and people being their authentic selves. Their disability may affect the way they get to work, but that doesn't affect how they do the work. And so that, those are the ideas we're trying to share, that solutions are there. It's just the getting people to understand that you may have to look at the problem differently, which is actually what they've always asked for.
That's interesting, in so much as if you look at remote work during the pandemic, for example, folks with disabilities already knew that it was possible to get things done from a remote environment. With the rise in gas prices, one would think that with this shift for folks with disabilities, it would just be what comes naturally.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Cam, because we do look at that and wonder, why is it that, you know, management systems don't believe that the employees that work remotely are working, because, you know, if their little screen isn't green, or if their little avatar isn't running, or, you know, we have one of the management principles that we should live by is, we pay people to do a job, trust them to do the job. That's what we do. We often run into this situation when there's an uneven distribution of work and somebody has more time to watch what somebody else is doing. The ability for folks to work from home, to be productive, to be more productive, has been demonstrated time and time again. But this is a culture change. And in order for the culture to change, the leadership has to change their thinking about that. And that's what that is. You can even see now the federal government has mandated for many employees to return to work as more days of the week, but they're not actually able to do it because they don't actually have the office space. So it's kind of a not well thought out policy of it's a reaction. It can, to be honest, if we have another pandemic, watch how quickly we'll all go back to working remotely and nobody will have an issue. This is a societal norm. This is a culture piece that will take time to, adapt. And once upon a time, you know, we didn't have a 40-hour work week. We could thank unions for things like that. So as things evolve, and also I think as we see artificial intelligence become more of a play in work, you will see things that may be more remote or opportunities to be more remote. And I think that those opportunities are ones we need to grasp, because not every workplace has to look like an office 9 to 5.
So sort of sounds like the rest of the world is kind of catching up to what the disability population already knew.
Well, you know, Cam, we have been innovators. Folks with disabilities have been both innovating the workplace and society we live in just by their sheer existence, whether that be mobility aids, Braille, sign language, the inclusion of, a broad range of folks. We continue to change society because we are being present. We are there. We are taking place inside the community. We are visible. This is another thing we talk about, is that folks are their best selves when they don't have to edit who they are, so that your disability doesn't make you stand out. It's just you're different in that particular way. It doesn't mean anything. It's the same with somebody having black hair or somebody having blonde hair. It's interesting that if we took everybody in the world who had a set of glasses and we took their glasses, they would be disabled tomorrow. But yet with one piece of glass and some plastic, they are not as disadvantaged as they were previously. So why can't we look at all of the accommodations in that way? Why can't we look at, you know, supporting somebody to be the best version of themselves? So that's a contributing, supported, enriched community. Those are the things that make it at the end of the day. You know, people talk about social policy or, you know, helping somebody get a job. Is that what we should be doing? Well, if we don't help them get a job and we don't support folks who are struggling, then they're always going to struggle. But if we help somebody find their place, then they will help build a place for somebody coming behind. So as a population, as a country, as a species, we're trying to improve. That's what we should do. We should evolve. So these ideas about inclusion are not new. Folks with disabilities have been saying this for decades. I think now it's only coming to fruition because the labor market is changing, the economy is changing, and the needs and the skills of folks with disabilities are more present. And they're there. They're visible. It's not hidden. We don't have institutions where we lock up folks with disabilities. We bring people into our community. We give people the opportunity to contribute to the best of their ability. that's what we should do.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, Linda McMullen will be telling us a little bit about the MG Society. So what can you tell me about the MG Society?
It's a national organization. It's been in existence since 2014, but it actually became a true national organization about 4 years ago. We support and help through education and support groups for people all across Canada. Unfortunately, it's only in English because we don't have anybody that can run it who speaks French. So we're working on trying to improve that.
So for those who might not be as familiar with how myasthenia gravis affects a person, could you take me through a little of that?
Mm-hmm. Myasthenia gravis is a rare neuromuscular disease that affects the communication of the muscles and the nerves at the neuromuscular junction. So what it causes are symptoms from droopy eyelids, double vision, difficulty swallowing and breathing, weakness in your arms and legs and neck. And as of yet, there's no cure.
So, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
Oh, yes. Yes. We have people, usually when they start on their journey, they get tested for either having a stroke or for MS or even in some cases for types of cancer. And also ALS is another one that sometimes gets mentioned when you're on your journey to get diagnosed.
So that being said, do you have any advice for those who might be starting out asking those questions? Might this be what I have? And if it is, how best can I respond to it?
I would suggest keeping a journal, documenting your symptoms as to what time of the day are you noticing it. Does it improve with rest? Is it worse if you're really active and using your muscles a lot? And finding a good neurologist who understands myasthenia, as it is a rare disease.
So how does the society reach out to the public to let them know that they are a source of support for this condition?
Well, we've just updated our website, and on our website there is a newsletter that people can sign up for, and that newsletter goes out twice a year. We're hoping to do it more often, but right now we've got a small volunteer base, and we can only cover so much at a time. And there's also the support group that meets once a week. And we also host webinars with different professionals in different fields dealing with people with myasthenia.
So in your time with the society, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, we found a lot of people that have found the support groups very helpful. And with me on my journey, I was an RN who was forced to retire due to this. And I'm giving back by helping other people along the journey so they don't feel alone.
So what are the next steps forward for the society?
I'm hoping that we can get more donations, more volunteers, and make MG Canada sustainable so that when I step down, there'll be somebody else that can take it on and keep it growing so people in Canada never have to feel alone when they're diagnosed with MG.
So in your own diagnosis journey, how did you keep yourself strong in those hard moments where we were feeling alone or just lost in terms of how to stay ahead of this situation?
Well, when I was diagnosed, before the invention of the internet. So we couldn't get a lot of information. So I had some really good friends that were my rock and my family. And I went through quite a period of depression for about 3 months, where the lady that went with me to the doctor where I got diagnosed, every time I saw her, I would start crying. And then I decided I needed to raise awareness due to my fear of going to emergency and them not knowing anything. So I started doing newspaper articles and hosting an awareness walk in Courtney, BC, which is where I am. And that's still going on today.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So, you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making a cocktail and having fun. Even when with friends, it's important to remember alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks can save a life. Then, you can do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Safe.
Welcome back to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Sean Wiltshire gave us an update on the current state of disability employment, and we heard a little bit about myasthenia gravis from Linda McMullen. In this segment of our show, Jennifer Cohens will be telling us a little bit about Prader-Willi syndrome. So what can you tell me about the association?
So OPWSA, we are a nonprofit charity. Sorry, I should start by saying that the Ontario Prader-Willi Syndrome Association, also known as OPWSA. We are a nonprofit charity that is dedicated to enhancing the quality of life for individuals with Prader-Willi Syndrome, which I will be often referring to as PWS. And we also assist their families, caregivers, and professionals who support them. Our organization, we provide support throughout every stage of the PWS journey, from diagnosis, early intervention, assisting with school, adulthood, residential living, and aging. And we help families navigate challenges, access resources, and building a community, a network of support for those families. And we do this through a number of programs and services, such as crisis support, training, resource development, and resource dissemination. We host events for individuals with PWS and their families and caregivers. We connect families with community resources. We host an annual camp for adults with Prader-Willi syndrome. We provide free fridge locks to our Ontario members. And we also have a first trike program that loans adaptive trikes and adaptive equipment to individuals with Prader-Willi syndrome. And we've also expanded to create some new programs such as virtual social gatherings, our animal care program, which connects individuals or adults with PWS with local animal shelters for volunteering opportunities. So a number of different programs and supports for our community.
So for those who might not be as familiar with the syndrome, could you tell me a little bit about how it affects people?
Sure. So Prader-Willi syndrome, or PWS, is a rare genetic disorder that affects approximately 1 out of every 10,000 to 30,000 births. So that means statistically in Ontario, we could expect about 600 to 800 individuals with PWS. We only know of those that come knocking on our door, so we know of about 300 individuals with Prader-Willi syndrome. And PWS occurs because of an abnormality on a portion of chromosome 15. And that portion of chromosome 15 affects a portion of the brain called the hypothalamus, which plays a crucial role in regulating a number of bodily functions, including hunger, body temperature, pain, emotions, sleep, fluid balance, and fertility. So PWS affects a person's appetite, growth, metabolism, cognitive function, and behavior. And the hallmark characteristics of PWS are chronic feelings of insatiable hunger and a slow metabolism. And those two things together can lead to excessive eating and life-threatening obesity.
So,
and like so many other disabilities and syndromes, it does affect each person differently to varying degrees.
So the host of symptoms you described, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis if the proper genetic testing isn't done?
For sure. I would say probably 20 years ago, oftentimes individuals with PWS weren't diagnosed until they started to exhibit some of the hunger and other symptoms of Prader-Willi syndrome. These days, it is more common to be diagnosed closer to birth because there are a couple of signals that help doctors understand that something might be going on. Babies with Prader-Willi syndrome, they do tend to be quite floppy because of their low muscle tone. So they are very floppy. They also have a poor sucking mechanism because of the palate in their mouth isn't fully formed properly. So a lot of babies with PWS are fed internasally. So typically when there's those signals, doctors will do some genetic testing. However, there are still the occasional case where individuals with Prader-Willi syndrome aren't diagnosed until some of the other symptoms become more pronounced.
So in your time with the association, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
I think there's a few. So one of the things that I've really taken on with my time with OPWS, I've been with the association for about 11 years now, is we've really grown our PWS Awareness Month campaign. So each day throughout the month of May, which is Prader-Willi Syndrome Awareness Month, we share a Did You Know fact about PWS. And the purpose of these facts are to provide easy to understand information about Prader-Willi syndrome that members in our community can share with their own networks to help friends, family, and the wider general population get a better understanding of the challenges that individuals with PWS and their caregivers face on a daily basis. This campaign has done really well. We're currently running it right now. And each post that I've done this month has, for the Did You Know facts about PWS, has been viewed by over 1,000 people. And our most engaging post so far has been viewed by 6,500 people and has been shared over 100 times. So we're really getting more information about Prader-Willi syndrome out to the general population. Another area that I think has been really wonderful is we have a group of adult parents, so these are parents who have adult children with Prader-Willi syndrome, that came together to start working on residential options. And one of the members of our community, Kathy Maloff, is the chair of this committee, and she has really spearheaded the amazing work that they've done. But these families have come together to help start planning for their child's future, and some really great strides have been made. We have a few individuals with Prader-Willi syndrome who are living outside of the home with support, building homes of their own. A number of families engaged in this group have also increased the amount of passport funding that they're receiving. So they've really done some great work to help the other adult families in the community really grow. So those are probably two of the big things, and I'll give one more. We have a camp for adults with Prader-Willi syndrome that we've been running since, I believe, 2007. And this camp is for 1 week every year. We have approximately 30 to 35 individuals with PWS that attend this camp, and it's run at Shadow Lake Center, which is a community living Toronto location. And it's a week specifically for individuals with Prader-Willi syndrome, so it's an environment that is safe for them. They get to participate in a number of different camp programs like canoeing and, you know, hiking and, you know, so many different things, and it's such a beautiful place, and it's really an incredible program. The campers love it. They look forward to it all year. It's a great opportunity for them to connect and see one another, but it's also, you know, a really great week of respite for the parents and caregivers as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
My friends, in all of disability life, there is potentially nothing so dangerous as misdiagnosis. As I've always maintained, medical science wasn't built by Henry Ford. It's not an assembly line. It's not about how many people you can get in and out in an hour. It's about the correct diagnosis. It's about understanding the symptoms and how best to respond to them. In the world of genetic disorders, this can be especially difficult. But I maintain that a doctor who's determined enough and caring enough will find the answer. However, it also depends upon the person with the condition to be honest and upfront about their situation. Pride doesn't solve problems. Honesty does. Communication does. Working together to find the seeds of hope in what might look like a hopeless situation. For I maintain, for every time that there has been a pronouncement that someone will never do this or that, there has always been that someone, that rare exception. One who says, I'm not willing to live with that. I will find a way to pursue my dreams. I will find a way to set that precedent. I will do the things no one expects of me. Not necessarily because they're out to inspire, but because they're out to live to the fullest. And such is the perfect right of anyone, whether they have a disability or not. For the truth is, we all love stories of somebody overcoming something, rising to the occasion. It's not why a person with a disability succeeds necessarily. They do it because it is their nature. However, if it has the side effect of building up others, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But the truth is, we all must explore our own potentials. But that begins with understanding the realities of our situation, beyond just what's in some medical textbook. As it's always been said, if you've met one person with a given condition, congratulations, you've met one person with a given condition. That can never factor in the individual's successes, their strengths, their support networks, their drive to succeed. The truth is, we all just want the same thing, to be the best version of ourselves, to be understood and to be valued as part of the community. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Hi, it's Nardwar, the human serviette, saying you're listening to CJSF Burnaby and do-do-loo-do CJSF. Yeah.
Cheese, please, yes. Cheese, please, you're so fine.
You want to listen all the time. Snarf, Dude, and Daffodil will spin the hits. It's all cheesy music. They love it to bits. Well, Snarf, Dude is the man in the band. Find it.
cheesy music is his only plan. Daffodil with sugar, but she's also spice. She might be saucy, but she can be pretty nice. All the cheesy music, they can scrounge. You'll hear the favorites in the Limburger Lounge playing all that is wacky, warm.